You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Barry Vitkoff. He's the author of the novella titled The Boy with Six Fingers. Barry is based in Ashland, Oregon. He's a retired educator with 45 years of experience as a middle school English teacher, school administrator, and adjunct professor. He's also the author of Unknown and Other Stories. His poetry and short stories have appeared in a variety of publications. Today, we're spotlighting Barry's two books, The Boy with Six Fingers and Unknown and Other Stories. Welcome to The Exchange, Barry.
Thanks, Mike. Nice to be here.
So you spent 45 years as an educator serving as an English teacher, an administrator, and a professor. How did all those decades of focusing on academic writing and leadership training shape the voice that you eventually found in your creative fiction?
Well, that's an interesting question because I'm not sure I know how it shaped my voice. For all those years, I regretted not getting back to what I thought were my roots as a teenager and a college student, which was being a creative writer. I started writing when I was 13 or so, and my father used to carry my poems around in his billfold and show them to his clients, which motivated me quite a bit. But then as a teacher and a school administrator and later actually having the opportunity to be adjunct here at SOU, I had lost that path. And so when I retired the first time, I said, I want to get back and I want to start writing again. And so I began to write poetry and I started to write short stories. And I don't think my voice came through the writing I did in those years. I think it came from a lot of my experiences. So a lot of the characters that have surfaced in my writing are loosely based on people I've met along the way, or I kind of invented in my own mind along the way and put aside with the idea that maybe I'll write something about them later on.
When was your first book published?
My first book was a collection of poems, and it was published in 2020, I believe. It was, well, that the numbers don't work out because it was almost 9 years ago.
How old were you?
I was 70. I'm 79 now. And no, you're looking astonished because I look, you know, 70 is the new 35, isn't it?
Well, we'll have to find out what your diet is.
It's not very good. But yeah, no, it's been 9 years ago, and it was a serendipitous journey. A friend of mine who was a poet said, you ought to publish a book. And I had no idea how you even do that. And she said, send it into my publisher, and they're a small press in Georgetown, Kentucky, and see what happens. And lo and behold, they published it, and I've been happy with them. So my seventh book will come out next February, another collection of poetry.
Okay, so once you start, the floodgates have opened.
Yeah, I think so. I think I've developed a number of friends in the writing community in Southern Oregon, and they've all been so encouraging. And they've been great about giving me good feedback and what they like and don't like and which way I might want to go. And sometimes I listen to it, and many times I don't, and I just kind of take my own path. For me, publishing wasn't about having another career. It was just about publishing a book and saying I did it.
So tell me about your creative writing process as a retired person.
Well, you know, I'd like to say I'm a disciplined writer, and I'm not. I write in spurts. I don't get up in the morning the way a real writer would do it, somebody who is trying to make a living at it. I don't get up in the morning and say, okay, I'm going to be writing for the next 3 or 4 hours. I'm going to produce 5 pages or 10 pages or so many words. My writing typically comes when I'm sort of bored and nothing's going on, and then ideas seem to drop into my head out of nowhere. And I journal a lot, so I'll journal those ideas, and then I'll perhaps go back and say, oh, this might make a poem or this might make a story. I find theater to be a great motivator. I just love going. We have so many wonderful local theaters here, RTC and OSF. In fact, I'll be at a play this afternoon, and oftentimes I sit in the theater with a notepad in my back pocket, and I make notes about things that I might want to write about because they came out of what I'm seeing. So it's not a linear path at all. It's just a very strange kind of a journey.
Well, you're fortunate because you live here in Ashland, and the Oregon Shakespeare Festival is right down the street.
Yep.
Southern Oregon University's theater is right here. Ashland High School has a wonderful theater program.
Oh, they do.
And then you have the cabaret, and this whole place is just filled with a lot of great theater.
My wife and I moved here in 2005 from California, and probably the greatest attraction was the fact that it's a culturally rich place, and the arts here are alive in all the arts, whether it's music or visual arts or performing arts. It's just an incredible place to live.
I agree. Let's get to your book. Let's start with your books, rather. Let's start with The Boy with Six Fingers. Now, mm-hmm. It centers on a character named Seymour S. Seymour, or
Cy.
And he befriends a young boy who has six fingers. Tell me about it.
Well, this young boy has six fingers on his left hand, and he has very supportive parents who always believe that his six fingers made him unique and that being unique was the most positive asset one could have. And so happenstance takes him to meet Seymour S. Seymour, or Cy, as he likes to be called, but everyone else calls him Mr. Seymour. And they strike up a friendship when the boy with six fingers notes that Seymour, who's much, much older, in his 80s, walks around wearing a red beret and red tennis shoes, and he carries a canteen. And he said, oh, this is a really interesting character. And they strike up a conversation, which leads to a five-year relationship before Cy passes away, but that relationship went on for 50 years, and it involved a whole bunch of characters, and the book ends with a 50-year anniversary party for Cy, where these characters come together in a reunion and how their lives were changed just by the fact that they met this wonderful old man.
My guest is Barry Vitkoff. He's a retired educator, fiction writer, and poet based in Ashland, Oregon. His latest books are The Boy with Six Fingers and Unknown and Other Stories. Now, when The Boy with Six Fingers meets Seymour S. Seymour, he's only seven.
Yep.
And for 5 years, they hang out, walking dogs and engaging one another. And when he's 12, Seymour passes. What happens to this kid's life?
Well, he grows up. He grows up always with the wisdom that he learned from Mr. Seymour. But he grows up trying to do good in the world. He becomes a teacher himself, and he uses his differences to help others appreciate their own differences and who they are. A long time ago, I was asked, what is an adult? And my definition of being an adult is one who not only accepts the uniqueness of everyone around them, but their own uniqueness. And that being an adult is just that kind of an accepting kind of person. And I wanted to write a novella with characters that sort of exemplified that way of being in the world. In fact, my dedication in the book is dedicated to people who are unique. It's just something that I feel deeply.
And you show how this uniqueness, this embrace of empathy and friendship can be a lasting quality that has ripple effects for 50 years.
Yeah, I try to do that. And the book is filled with, I hope, some humor. It has tragedy that everyone learns to live with. It has a mystery that's never solved, but it's accepted as being just part of what life is about. And I wrote this book in a way that allowed characters to come through. The first half of the book involves a number of characters, and all those characters are written from their point of view. It's not one point of view throughout the book. And then the second half of the book is the reunion part of the book where they all come together. And the coming together is around trying to reconcile a terribly tragic event that happened earlier in the book, and without it ever being reconciled, but with the characters being allowed to engage, learn from one another, and accept life for what it is. And to know that, I think, if I recall correctly, I ended the book with when one door closes, another one opens, or something to that effect. That's sort of what I hope folks take away.
Well, it's an amazing read, and that tragedy brought tears to my eyes.
Mm.
I can't even imagine. In your latest release, Unknown and Other Stories, you took the word unknown in a very different direction.
Mm-hmm.
Help me understand that.
Well, the first six stories are the unknown stories in this collection of short stories. And it's a piece of magical realism or speculative fiction that asks questions about the power of being a writer, whether writers can produce something that becomes very real, or is it real? And it involves a couple of characters who are never really known until until the very end of the collection. And so being unknown, I think, allows folks to explore what's real and what's not real. And that's precisely what I'm trying to do with those stories.
Well, in one story, a woman appears unannounced at a man's home, and we aren't sure if she's real or conjured by the sea. This is near a seascape. He invites her in. What draws you to stories where imagination bends reality just enough to reveal hidden truths?
Well, that's an interesting question because I'm not sure I have an answer to it. And I'm not so sure that he invited her in to his house. I think that she invited herself in. And she just came in and made herself at home and made a meal and sat down and had a conversation. And at no time were either of their identities revealed by name until really the end of the selection of six stories. And that was a device I intended throughout this, is that the main characters would be unnamed and not revealed. They would remain unknown and not revealed until the end of the book.
That's amazing. What made you even think to do that? Because usually a writer wants to develop the character and provide the reader with some insight into who this person is. This is a mystery.
Yeah, and that was actually intentional on my part. Most of my writing is not with intent. I just write and see where things go. I don't usually know where they're going to end up until I get there. But in this case, I knew I wanted to get there using that device of not revealing characters' names as a way of trying to coax the reader into continuing. And so that was probably the only intent I had, was let's keep this mysterious until the end, because that may help the reader to keep going. But I didn't know how it was going to end until I wrote that last story.
So it was a surprise to you, too.
I surprised myself.
Now, the first sequence of stories in Unknown was written during summer at Sea Ranch on the California coast.
Yeah.
What's your relationship there?
Well, my wife and I have been vacationing at the Sea Ranch probably close to 40 years. We used to live in a little coastal town in California called Capitola near Santa Cruz. And we would meet dear friends of ours. We would meet them once a year at the Sea Ranch, and we'd get a house together or not, but we'd meet there. And then when we moved to here to Ashland, we missed the coast. So we try to find ways during the summer to get back to the coast, and that was just the place to go. And so we would rent a house there for a while. And it's one of those places where you don't have much to do. You take walks. You eat. You take more walks. You take a nap. You eat. And stories just sort of appear. And I just found that to be a real productive place to write.
Does the seascape become a character itself?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think the Sea Ranch lures you in to the environment. And I think it's intentional, because the Sea Ranch was one of these places that was built with the intention of all the structures there blending into the environment. It's a very environmentally conscious place. And you can't help but make the location part of one of the characters.
Can a writer conjure a reality that becomes real?
Well, I'd like to think we could. That would be a special power, wouldn't it? But no. Then I have to come back to reality. You know, a few weeks ago, we had quite a violent thunderstorm here in Ashland. And I was sitting on my front porch enjoying the thunderstorm. I kind of like them because they're away. They're not too close. And then I was writing a poem. And as I was writing the word thunder.
I want you to stop right there. As you were writing the word thunder.
Yes.
We're going to take a short break. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Barry Vitkoff. He's the author of The Boy with Six Fingers and Unknown and Other Stories. Barry's a retired educator based in Ashland, Oregon. His poetry and short stories have appeared in a wide variety of publications. So, Barry, you were telling us before the break that when you sit down to write and you wrote the word thunder.
And I'm telling you this because you were asking, can writers conjure up some kind of reality or make things happen? So I'm sitting on my front porch and I write the word thunder. And just as I wrote the word thunder, lightning struck the home across the street from me. I have never experienced lightning that close before. It was just this blast of white light and deafening sound. I jumped out of my chair. I ended up going out to see what was going on, and I ended up calling the fire department because the roof was on fire. Now, everything was fine. The owners weren't there at the time. Damage was minimal. We all had a relatively interesting neighborhood moment with the fire department out in front. But after reflecting on the moment, I thought, my goodness, I have such power as a writer. I wrote the word thunder and it happened. Yeah, I'd like to believe those kinds of things can really occur, but no. They occur on the page, and hopefully the reader has a good time with it.
That's certainly a lot of power. Now, as a prolific author of, I think, six books now?
Six books.
In less than a decade.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel that your characters have stepped out of the page and into your life?
No. I would worry if that were to be the case. I'd wonder what was going on in my own mind. I guess I have to keep boundaries. Those characters live in another space, and I enjoy them. I like to interact with them. I mean, the characters in the Unknown stories haven't stopped. I've written three or four other stories in addition to that that haven't been published. I don't know if they ever will be published. But I really kind of like that woman, and I like the man, and I like some of the characters in there very, very much. And they're not going to leave me, but they aren't part of me.
Who are some of your favorite characters?
Well, I like the unknown woman, and I like the man who's not named till the end, and I'm not going to give that away right now. The other stories in the book, I like Micah very much. I like this older man who was a former English teacher who writes gratitude notes every day.
Wait, he's a former English teacher?
Yeah, he may have come from my own experience. I would like to think I write gratitude notes every day, but I don't. But I like the fact that he does. And the mystery of who writes the notes, I like that. I like his friend Al, who's the exact opposite of who he is, sort of an older, wannabe younger person who tries to stay hip in old age, something I'm not going to attempt to do because I'm not sure I know what hip is, not anymore anyway. But most of the folks that I involve, I like, yeah.
Well, Unknown in Other Stories features characters like elves, mimes,
yeah.
Jugglers. How did these performers help you explore these unexpected gifts of kindness?
Well, I've always been attracted to jugglers. At one time I used to live in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and down the street from me, there was a troupe of jugglers that used to practice on their front lawn all the time. And they became a very famous juggling act, and I can't remember their name all of a sudden. The Flying Karamazov Brothers. And they used to practice down in the meadow, down the street from where I lived in Felton, California. And I was always amazed with jugglers, their sense of humor, the ability to throw things and catch them. I used to try to – I was the unknown man who tried to juggle and never could successfully juggle anything. That was me. I was the one who I could never get coordinated enough to juggle a thing. I mean, just never worked. So I always thought that jugglers possessed this magical quality, and I love magicians. And I just think that their message of pulling you in to be amazed, willingly to be amazed, even though you know what you're seeing isn't necessarily real. Juggling's pretty real, but still it has that mystical quality to it that I think magic has. And there's a lot of comedy with it. I've never seen jugglers who weren't funny. And I've never seen too many magicians who didn't have a good sense of humor. So I just kind of like playing around with those ideas.
You know, as you say that, it dawns on me that those types of attributes, the skills that you're mentioning, the sleight of hand, the juggling, people who have these extraordinary skills tend to not be mean people.
Yeah.
At least their persona, you know, facing the public, it just you don't get this idea that they are mean people. There's this sense of kindness. There's this sense of humor and levity with life.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We need all the kindness we can get in this world. And I think you're right. I think that they exude that in their performances, regardless of what their personal lives may be.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Barry Vitkoff. He's a retired educator, fiction writer, and poet based in Ashland, Oregon. His latest books are The Boy with Six Fingers and Unknown and Other Stories. Barry, does a good story need to surprise a reader?
It has to surprise me. I think that's the element of what I'm looking for when I read a book. I need something that causes me to pause, wonder what I just read. I'm a reader that's always, I'm a very, very slow reader because I'm always rereading sentences that just grab me. And so I think stories have a duty to surprise the reader in some way. And if I can do that, I'm happy. If I can surprise myself, I'm happier. And I just hope that someone who reads my stories can say, okay, that was a nice story. I'm glad I spent some time with it. And it surprised me along the way sometimes.
Do stories need to have characters that you genuinely care about?
They do for me. And that's true of just about anything, any art form. Whether it's a story that's written down or performed or whatnot, I have to feel that I have a connection to those characters. Even if there's a dastardly fellow, I got to feel that there's something about that person that I can relate to at least. So, yeah, I think for the most part, there have to be characters that are likable.
Okay, well, you also touch on the unspoken tensions in relationships, mm-hmm. such as a man living a double life.
Mm-hmm.
What fascinates you about the secrets that people keep?
Well, I think we all have secrets. I don't think we're willing to expose our secrets, nor should we expose our secrets. I mean, we're entitled to a private life. That particular character intentionally duped others for the purpose of just making money. And I don't find that to be likable. And so I wanted to create a character who changes because another person challenges him to be changed.
Mm.
And it was a hard story to write. And I'm not even sure that I ever finish those stories. But yeah, he was somebody that needed confrontation, and I wanted to create a woman who was skillful at confronting, and then kind of confronting her own misdeeds in terms of whether or not what she was doing was morally appropriate. So I thought the story was a little more complicated than I intended it, and I hope it worked.
Well, how do you ensure that even your main characters have qualities that can pull the reader in, that they can relate to?
As you've discovered already by the use of the word character, my stories are very much character-driven. They're not necessarily driven by setting or circumstance or anything like that. I try to write characters that folks might want to read something about. Yeah. And I don't know how that works, to be perfectly honest about that. What I put on the page is often not what I'm intellectually thinking about, but what I'm feeling about at the moment. And I just hope it works.
Well, your writing has been called lyrical, reflective, and gently surreal. When you sit
Who
down,
in the world would say that?
When you sit down to write, are you aiming for a specific emotional impact?
Mike, you're asking very difficult questions. No, I don't think so. I don't think when I sit down to write. If it comes along the way, that's part of the surprise. I'm not wanting to force somebody to feel a certain way. I think they have to own their own feeling depending on what's there on the page.
Okay. Now, you also write poetry.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about it. You have a new poetry collection, right?
I do. I've had several poetry collections, and I have another one coming out in February of next year. I enjoy selecting words. So when I'm writing a story, it's about selecting sentences and putting sentences together. And when I'm writing a poem, I'm thinking very hard about the words that I'm putting on the page and how they're arranged and whether I'm going to have rhymes or not have rhymes or whether I'm going to have a structured poem or not a structured poem. So I enjoy the challenge of a lot of structural poems. Lately, I've been writing a lot of Shakespearean-style sonnets. In fact, I've set a goal. I want to write 154 sonnets. If the Bard could write 154 sonnets, why not I?
And how far are you into
that? I'm up
going?
To 44.
Okay.
Now, I'm not going to say they're all very good sonnets, but I've written 44 so far in a Shakespearean style. I enjoy the challenge of having those restrictions and really having to carefully select words and, in this case, rhythms and rhymes and try to say something at the same time.
So in comparing your poems with your prose, how do your themes of identity and character in your books come through in your poetry?
I think in my poetry, it's much more personal. It's much more about who I am and what's living inside of me. It's not about developing another character. It's about my own reflections on the world around me, what's going on inside me. So it's a more personal journey. I did a collection of poems that came out earlier this year called the Boychuk Poems. Boychuk is Yiddish for young man, and I grew up culturally Jewish, not particularly very religious. I did have a bar mitzvah. So I felt a need during this time in our history, in our shared history, to write some poems, not only about my family, but about some reflections about what's happening in the world right now and the conflicted nature of it it holds for me as a Jew. And my poetry goes inside, not outside.
Okay. We have 30 seconds. My last question. You don't write for a living.
No.
So if money's not the goal, what is?
Ego. It's just, it's pure ego. I just, I live a privileged life where I can retire and live a very a comfortable life, not needing to have another job. And it's just purely driven by my own ego.
Okay. Well, we'll have to leave it there. Thanks for so much for joining me today, Barry.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it.
My guest was Barry Vitkoff, educator, poet, and fiction writer. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio.